But first, the Veterans Affairs Department has an ambitious long-term strategy that would dramatically expand the medical services it delivers to veterans through telehealth. Right now, though, many of those plans are technically illegal because of the way doctors are licensed state by state. As Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu reports, VA thinks those laws need to change.
VA is already regarded as a national leader in telemedicine. The department spent more than $1 billion on telehealth services last year, providing more than 2 million appointments between veterans and a clinician in a far-off location. Overall, 12% of the Veterans Health Administration's patients got at least some portion of their treatment through telehealth. But VA says it wants to do a lot more, and it could if it weren't for legal restrictions that prevent its doctors from treating patients across state lines. Most of its current services connect a doctor at one VA facility with a patient at another one, and that's perfectly legal as long as the doctor has an unrestricted license in at least one state. But the rules are different if the patient is not on federal property, say at his or her home or at a private sector medical clinic. In that case, the VA clinician would have to be licensed in the state where the patient happens to be sitting. Dr. Kevin Galpin is the executive director for telehealth services in the Veterans Health Administration.
This legislation is really critical to realize the vision. We really need to be authorized to deliver care to a veteran in any location, and then we can really take advantage of it. I mean, you know, libraries or post offices or academic sites or any private site where a veteran can come for care that would allow us to deliver that care, even if our provider is in another location. So I just want to put it out there. I hear what the other part of this vision is. That's something we'd love to do. We just really are looking forward to the authority on that.
Specifically, VA wants Congress to exercise the Constitution's Supremacy Clause with legislation that would make clear that, at least in the case of VA, doctors don't need to be licensed in the same state where they're practicing. The department says the change would have major implications for how the VA runs its medical system at the local, regional, and at national levels. Perhaps the biggest impact would be in smaller, more rural communities where veterans need specialized care that's not available through private providers, or where it's very hard for VA to recruit its own medical staff.
What we have in this country, in our VA system, but also in our communities, is there are certain places where there are just gaps in services. And this is where the legislation comes in. It's so critical to provide, is that we need to look and say, where can't you get a certain service in the VA? Where can't you get neurology care? And where also is that care not available in the community? And that's on the top of our work list. We need to figure out a program so we can remote in that care or do a hybrid model where we bring in person, some remote care. For primary care mental health, core ambulatory services, we need to expand our interim staffing program. This is where, again, at a site that's rural, you lose one of your primary care providers. We don't want to wait 6 months to a year to get someone else in there. We're going to start hiring that provider, but we want to bring in a remote primary care provider to fill in those services so we provide consistent access.
The department is not looking to replace face-to-face contact with medical providers. The decision to use telehealth is ultimately up to the patient, and whether it works at all is highly dependent on the type of care the patient needs. But in some cases, it would, for example, let a veteran who tends to spend part of the year in one part of the country and several months in another see the same doctor for all of his or her visits, regardless of where they're located. Galpin says it would also let VA make better use of its specialists who are experts in medical conditions that are more common to veterans than the general population.
We also need to move around our national experts. So if there's an expert in a rare condition, that person, let's say there's 10 veterans that have that rare condition, that provider is providing input into all of their care. And so I think when you look at that, you see, you know, yes, right now a lot of it is, you know, the decisions are made at the facility. It's facilities trying to take care of the veterans in their catchment areas. We're moving toward a model where we're doing more interstate, more across the VISN, but where we expect to go, we are going to leverage the VA enterprise in a way that you can't do if you don't have a national integrated healthcare system. And I think that's where it starts getting incredibly exciting.
Relaxing licensing restrictions would also help VA partner with other medical providers and extend care to veterans the department simply isn't reaching today, according to Michael Adcock, the executive director at the Center for Telehealth at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. In his state, Adcock says the VA's 2 hospitals and 8 clinics are only used by about a third of Mississippi's eligible veterans, partly because those that do use them face long wait times to get appointments. That could change if VA and the university medical system could partner to treat veterans at brick-and-mortar facilities that the university has already networked together.
By layering veteran services across UMMC's 200 active telehealth access points, the VA could quickly reach more patients without significant investment. Because of the deep nexus that already exists between academic medical centers and the nation's VA hospitals, it seems a natural progression for us to partner to provide health care and chronic disease management for our veterans. We have attempted this type of partnership in the past, but were unsuccessful due to administrative red tape locally and the VA's challenges in engaging with external healthcare partners globally. After multiple attempts to bring requested dermatology and mental health services to the VA, progress stalled and the services were not implemented.
Even without new legislation, the department sees several ways in which it can continue to make better and more use of telehealth. As of now, most of VA's telemedicine programs are run by local facilities, who usually don't face the problem of treating patients across state lines. Galpin says those programs can certainly expand.
Telehealth is just going to be integrated into our daily operations. And what does that mean is that probably every specialty is going to adopt some portion of remote care or virtual care to make their services more accessible. It's also just going to be a part of routine operations in the sense that when a veteran leaves a clinic appointment, there's going to be a question of how do we best deliver this next visit? Is it in person? Is it by telephone? Is it by video? So it's just going to be kind of part of the regular routine and thought processes. Also at the facility level, we're going to make care more accessible to families and caregivers. As we know, you get better care when you have someone helping you navigate a complex medical system, especially if you have a lot of comorbidities. Some of our elder veterans fit into that category. So being able to invite someone in and saying, you know, yes, it's hard for you to make this appointment and help the veteran out, but we're going to bring you in virtually so you can attend the appointment, listen to the doctor, help them after they leave the clinic. That's really important. I mean, some family caregivers live, you know, across state lines.
Also, VA thinks telemedicine has important implications for critical acute problems. The department is piloting a telestroke program at 10 of its sites over the next 5 years, making it a priority because stroke victims often need the right treatments within minutes to avoid permanent brain damage.
We focus a lot on ambulatory care, but the inpatient potential for this is dramatic. And that specialty consultant network, that ability to walk into an ICU and have a button on the wall that says, I need to talk to an intensivist or I need the neurologist right now, That's critical and that's life-saving.
Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.